risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is your host, Jess Root, and in this show, this is the first of the 2015 season and preseason, in this case, team previews. As we have done the past 2 years, we have done one show with Seth Cox where we review the whatever news is going on at the Cardinals and we dedicate to the Cardinals. However, previewing every week, we always try to find someone from one of the SB Nation sites, or if not that, another expert of the upcoming team. The Arizona Cardinals open their preseason at home this Saturday against the Kansas City Chiefs. And as such, I am honored to have from arrowheadpride.com, one of the SB Nation sites, one of the premier SB Nation sites, I should inform you of, and I have Matt Cotter on the line. Matt, how's it going today?
I'm well. How are you, Jeff?
I'm glad that you're here. I appreciate taking the time. Over here in Arizona, we're just barely finishing up our work day. Out there in KC, you're probably easing on into the evening, are you not?
Yeah, we're logging the Royals.
Oh, that's good stuff. And the Royals, it's a good time to be a Kansas City fan these days, isn't it?
No doubt.
So the purpose, Matt, of having you on, since we haven't been around any other team thus far this year, is to kind of tell us about the state of the Chiefs. So you're entering year three of the Andy Reid experience. You've got a playoff appearance under your belt. It was a disappointing season last year, but it wasn't awful. Tell us kind of where is the fan base overall with the Chiefs right now in terms of enthusiasm and in terms of expectations entering Reid's third year?
You bring up a great point in terms of being in Reid's third year. To me, more than anything else about the Chiefs, that's the biggest story. I think it's also the biggest story no one's talking about. But if you're a Chiefs fan, if you've been paying attention, I think everyone is somewhere between fairly enthusiastic and we believe we're Super Bowl bound. And so you often see the Chiefs somewhere in the late top 10 in a lot of the power rankings, somewhere around there. There's some level of belief, even in sort of general NFL media, that Denver could be upended this year, that maybe Peyton's arm plus other Broncos foibles plus sort of the continued building of the Chiefs into a better team each and every year under John Dorsey and Andy Reid. So I think most Kansas City Chiefs fans are pretty convinced that the division is theirs for the taking, and that the team looks pretty poised for a decent playoff run if Jeremy Maclin can be the wide receiver they need him to be, and if the defense holds as true as it looks on paper.
Well, good. So let's take us back to the offseason. Obviously, the biggest moves of the offseason were, one, signing Justin Houston to that massive contract, which, from a Cardinals fan perspective, there was a little bit of chatter, not real discussion, but at least among fans and some blogger people like myself, is, with Houston on the franchise tag, would it be worth with the type of player and the impact he is? Because he's not just a pure pass rusher. He is the entire package when it comes to outside linebackers.
Yes, sir.
And there was talk of, hey, well, let's go after him and give up two picks. He's certainly worth two first-round picks. You signed him to the big deal. You brought in Jeremy Maclin. Give us kind of the highlights of the offseason, the biggest additions, the biggest losses, and perhaps some of the more underrated moves. I know you did take one guy off of the Cardinals' hands in Paul Fonseca. You gave him a little bit more money than I think that anyone really expected him to get. But right now, from what I saw, he's kind of buried in the depth charts. And while Paul is a great guy, an Arizona State guy, I really enjoyed him as a person. On the field, he was a smart player, but wasn't a great player by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, you mentioned, let's start there. Since we're talking about Paul here, he's really a candidate to not even make the Chiefs, which is both surprising and not surprising. I think it's surprising just in the fact that, hey, you just signed the guy, and you signed him to a 3-year deal, and you signed him to fairly questionable money. On the flip side, the Chiefs went all in this offseason on redoing that offensive line. So, you were asking even about other additions. They traded a fifth-round pick in the future for Ben Grubbs, who was paid fairly handsomely for the New Orleans Saints. Grubbs has been to a couple Pro Bowls, so he steps in at left guard. Both guard positions for the Chiefs last year were just kind of, somewhere between atrocious and below average. And so Grubbs was brought in to solidify the left side of that line and step in next to Eric Fisher, who the team really hopes takes a step forward as a former number one overall selection. He's finally healthy this year. Fisher's saying all the right things. The team's saying all the right things. So it seems like the left side of that line could be solidified in that way. But they also drafted a kid in the second round from Missouri, named Mitch Morse. It was a little bit of a surprise, but he's a very versatile offensive lineman who can play guard, center, maybe even swing out to tackle. So you have those investments alongside the return from injury and suspension of like Jeff Allen, who's a former second rounder, Donald Stevenson, who was a starter as recently as a couple years ago at right tackle. So with some of those guys coming back as well as some camp bodies, it's going to be interesting to see if Fonseca can even make the final team because he's been running with the third stringers.
That's really interesting, and it's at least he got at least paid. But he was really the interesting story about Fonseca. Late pick, I think it was a second rounder by the Seahawks or maybe it was the Eagles. He bounced around. He was a tackle. Then we bumped him inside when in 2013, and he had a really good camp. And the injury to Jonathan Cooper opened that door for him, and he just never let the job go. He played just well enough to keep everyone else behind him. Part of that was loyalty. Part of that is he knows his assignments, but he's not fit. I mean, he's a really big guy, but when it comes to overall strength and technique, he just didn't offer a lot in pass protection. And so he just did just enough, and that's good for him. But let's go to some of your bigger moves. Fonseca looks like, he might be on the market again, but tell us about how important it was to bring Houston back, and not just bring him back on that 1-year tag, but to pay him as much as, granted, that's a lot of money to pay any player, but is he worth that much money, and how much of an impact does he have on the entire defense?
Well, you just said it, it's the impact on the entire defense. It can't be overstated. It seems like both quarterback and pass rush, you just can't overstate the importance of having an impact player at both positions. And so I think for the Chiefs, knowing that you don't know what you have in Dee Ford, who was the first-round pick from last year out of Auburn, you know what you have, but you know it's fading in Tamba Hali, who they brought back on a team-friendly 1-year deal. He still definitely has gas in the tank, so there's definitely someone who is competent on the field across from Houston. But without Justin Houston, there were a lot of question marks, I think, with the pass rush. With Justin Houston, the pass rush is not only anchored well, but then some of these other guys who are question marks can really become bonuses versus just depending on an unknown at an impact position. And you're right when you said earlier, he is the complete package. he's only in his third year. He was considered a developmental sort of guy coming into the league who only had maybe one or two moves. And so sort of the knock on him, besides some off-the-field concerns, was that coming out of Georgia, that maybe he was kind of a one-trick pony and he could get away with it in college but not at the pro level. He has not only proven to be very coachable, not only proven to do whatever is asked of him and is a great learner, but then he's really stepped into a blooming leadership role. And of course, now with this contract, the team is going to, I mean, even now he's face of the franchise paying at that level. So I still think the best is yet to come there. I think there's a great
That's insane to think about, honestly. That's insane to think that the best is yet to come concerning the seasons that he's coming off of, especially because he already is really good. He drops back seamlessly into coverage. He's stout at the point of attack. If you could pick any one player to play that 3-4 and edge player, you really can't drop a better player. And he really is an anomaly because you rarely get much production from any player at the edge outside of the top half of the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's amazing to me, I mean, you know, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes, but I would hope for the sanity of every other fan base that their general manager put in at least a call to see whether the Chiefs were interested in taking a deal for two first round picks. Because, you know, I mean, even if pass rush isn't a great need, to be able to grab a sure thing in his prime, you're going to have to pay him, but the salary cap keeps going up. I mean, there's going to be room to move there. So, yeah, you know, to me, that's the kind of guy that you say, the cost is huge, but the impact is huge. And, you know, given the uncertainty of first-round picks, especially if you're picking late or expect to be picking late in the first round in the future, to me, that would be a no-brainer to at least offer that. So, you know, who knows if the Chiefs staved off some offers or what. But yeah, I think the fan base breathed a collective sigh of relief knowing that he's in town for a long time.
Now, I want to talk about the D Ford pick in a minute, but let's move on to now bring in Tamba Hali. I think is a really good thing, especially when you've got a guy on the field like Houston, you're going to have some cleanup sacks, and a guy like Hali can still be real productive, especially in a role where, hey, you've got Justin Houston running around this side, and if the quarterback runs to the other side, it'll be, guess what? He's got someone waiting for it. But I want to go to the offensive side. Obviously, Dwayne Bowe didn't have the impact over the last couple of years that you'd hope, and naturally, there is a knock on Alex Smith. I can't imagine you've ever heard this one before. The guy just doesn't want to throw down the field. Is it that? Is it just that he is super dedicated to staying within the framework of the offense, that Andy Reid didn't have him throw much down the field? Or was it a matter of talent? And will Jeremy Maclin fix that?
That's the question. I mean, I don't think there's any way to really know that until they get on the field this fall. So, you know, I think Alex Smith definitely, as you said, has his doubters. Sometimes you could feel really bad for the guy, because going back to his last couple years in San Francisco, he's just proven to win a lot of games. And like, he's never gotten the sort of acclaim or even appreciation from even his home fan base, let alone sort of the general NFL fan base. But, you know, what's a guy to do? Now he wins, but he doesn't win. Or he doesn't throw deep enough, you know. So, but, you know, they've never had Maclin. I mean, they've never had someone who can really stretch the field, run all the routes, who knows Reed's system inside and out. I think DeAnthony Thomas is a promising guy. You know, they're throwing him out at wide receiver from the outset this year. I think last year there was some sort of mystery using him in some sort of Dexter McCluster kind of a way.
That'll fix the whole thing. You call DeAnthony Thomas a receiver, then you get him to score a touchdown, and then you've got the monkey off of Alex Smith's back about not throwing touchdowns to receivers.
Exactly. You know, when your best downfield threat is Donnie Avery, and, you know, certainly no slight to Donnie Avery. You know, he can be a fine option on a team. He did what the team wanted him to do for as little play as he got, but there was some health issues there anyway. And I mean, just Macklin is just a game changer at the top of the depth chart. There's definite concerns about the rest of the depth chart. You know, the Chiefs need a number two option. You know, it feels like grasping at straws more than anything else there. But at the very least, the number one option is the best number one that it's been in a long time. And having a person who knows Andy Reid's offense so well, I think is really going to, I mean, as long as they can develop timing in camp with Alex, and I think that's going to go a long way.
Now, speaking of Alex Smith and the reputation that he's got, he definitely is a disappointment if you look from the standpoint that he was a formal number one pick, and so he should be a superstar. He eventually developed into a very capable quarterback, because it's different. He wins, but he didn't win with the same type of play that Tebow did, where Tebow was, you know, a terrible quarterback. Smith does really everything kind of pretty well, and while he doesn't have the strongest arm, I've seen him make throws. Just think back to the Super Bowl run that they had in San Francisco, and he made that throw down the field to hit Vernon Davis. That was not that was a man's throw, something that's really kind of interesting is Alex Smith was the first guy when Bruce Arians was hired. When Bruce Arians was hired, that was the first phone call they made. They knew he was going to be able to from San Francisco, and the Cardinals, believe it or not, and Bruce Arians with his downfield offense, the first phone call they made was to see if Alex Smith, they would make a trade for Alex Smith. It didn't happen, obviously. San Francisco, with no way in hell they were gonna trade it to the Cardinals inside the division. But there's really something to that. He is a very capable quarterback. How does the fan base see them? Are they... He seems to be the type of quarterback that a fan base is always looking. They take him for granted, and they're always looking to replace him because he's not flashy. He's not elite, per se. But he doesn't do really anything badly. How does this fan, and Kansas City fans, when it comes to sports in general, they have a, you talk about the, you know, Cardinals fans and Royals fans, while they are deeply loyal, they don't tend, and in my opinion over here, they don't have the reputation of being, they attack their players or bash them. So how is Alex Smith, is it a good fit for Alex Smith there as a fan base? Do they want more from him?
You know, I think it's maybe better than some other markets. Certainly, you know, KC can be a bit more compassionate place to be than maybe major media markets. You know, if he like an Eli Manning sort of scenario in New York. But you know, at the same time, though, I mean, I'm going to be more of an apologist for Smith than others would be. I just think I think he does not get the credit that he deserves. I think he's not nearly as questionable as some people think. I think KC has had holes where, you know, if Andy Reid doesn't lay an egg in week one last year, I mean, he came out after, like, the Tennessee Titans had two wins last year. One of them was a season-opening wallop against the Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium, right? So, you know, Reid comes out after the game and he says, we just got completely outcoached and outplayed at every level. Like, there's really nothing more to say about this. Like, we just laid a giant egg right after a whole month of training camp. If they don't do that, they're in the playoffs last year, and we're talking about how Alex Smith has now continued his playoff run for, you know, four straight years or whatever, and has brought, you know, the Chiefs to this, like, great winning level. Instead, now we're talking about, like, he's some mediocre option somewhere above the Kyle Ortons and the whatever of the world. But, you know, I mean, over the last 4 years, he's 38-16. He has 71 touchdowns, 23 interceptions. I just don't know how you don't say, I want that guy as my quarterback. I mean, you know, if it's versus Aaron Rodgers or, you know, some elite, you know, with Joe Flacco, right?
He's elite, though. He's elite.
Right. You know, I mean, certainly you would trade him for other quarterbacks. But given, like, watching, like, if I'm in Buffalo or New York right now on the Jets side, I mean, you're just, you know, or the Browns or any number of other franchises, you're just thinking, I can't do another year of this. You know, this is so silly that we're kicking the tires on the same old veterans every year. So the fact that John Dorsey knew, like, look, I'm going to pony up 2 second-round picks, I'm going to take care of this, and then I can move on to other positions, I just think it's silly to talk about Alex Smith in any way that shades him as some kind of guy who can't bring them to that next level. You know, now, if it becomes an Andy Dalton situation where they're in the playoffs every year and can't seem to advance, then that's another question. But at the very least, he does not deserve, in my opinion, the flack that he gets in terms of, you know, whether he's the right guy to even keep them competitive or whatever.
All right, so let's move to the draft, and we're going to talk Dee Ford. Would you view Dee Ford now? Obviously, I think that in my eyes, because the Cardinals kind of, I was very intrigued by Dee Ford, very much like you talk about when you were describing Houston coming out of college. Dee Ford has the same reputation as a one-trick pony, only he has a variety of pass rush moves. Unfortunately, his production, now granted, playing behind Holly and Houston makes it really tough, but I almost viewed the pick as a look to the future. He didn't really necessarily have to do anything last year, but he should have done a little bit more. That way they could have let Holly go, or even still they developed that, because if you got Holly in Houston, it's really tough to get time on the field. And unfortunately, we also have that infamous clip of Dee Ford running like the other way on a running play. Tell us about last year's draft class. Who did well, who is disappointing, and what are the expectations this year, and is anyone making big strides?
Dee Ford, that's just such an unknown. And I think, you know, you got to give credit to John Dorsey, because it's like he's just following the formula. What's the most important position? You know, let's get my bookend tackle. Let's get my left tackle. So, you know, Fisher, got it. You know, let me get my quarterback. Two second round picks to the Niners, check. So it's like he's just moving down the list. Now, who knows whether those guys are the right picks, but at the very least, you got to give Dorsey credit for, let me go to position, you know, like, let me go to the very next important position to solidify for the future, and let me make a run at it. So, you know, Dee Ford was kind of the next in line. Let me get the next developmental pass rusher, and they did it. It'll be interesting to see what he has, because he showcased some of that potential. You know, he showcased, like his burst off the line is the best on the team, and that's Houston or anyone else included. So you've got some potential there. What I love about this offseason, and it's kind of what I made mention of in the very beginning, is to me the story of the Chiefs this year is the coaching continuity. The fact that, look, this is the third year for every single coach on the staff. Everyone knows what they're doing. Another offseason, another, you know, strength training coach, everything. So I think there's something to be said there that it's hard to, you know, it's hard to, like, put that into, like, a stat. There's no stat that says, like, you know, like in Madden, like everyone goes up a few points for like another coaching continuity boost or something. Like, you know, that's not easy to chart. And yet at the same time, you know, like you see these quarterbacks who you like can say, look, they had a different offensive coordinator every year that they were a pro or something like that. And you wonder, like, what was possible for that person? So I think knowing that someone like Dee Ford is, okay, here he is, he's in year two. He's sitting behind the same guys again. He's learning from the same coaches again. He can get his mind around the system. I think there's a lot of hope there. I think the fans wanted the bigger payoff in year one because it's your first round.
It's natural. It's natural. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think patience is the key there, and I think that's even the same for the previous year's number one in Fisher, where, you know, it's like he's a number one pick. He's a bookend. He should be a Pro Bowler. And it's like, well, he's not. He's growing into it. He had injuries to, like, I think five different injuries last year in some way or another. So, yeah, there's just a lot of adjustment there, especially because he's out of the MAC. You know, like, that's not exactly power conference against power competition. But the Chiefs did hit a home run. I mean, you were asking about other draft picks. Philip Gaines, I don't know if you've had much of a chance to see Philip or not. But he's going to be a great corner. I mean, he's already a good corner. He's going to be a great corner. He sits across from Sean Smith, who just really had a breakthrough season, like his best season as a pro, which he'd already had a decent career so far. So, yeah, the Chiefs are loaded up in the secondary, too, and Gaines is a big part of that.
And so how important – turning the subject a little bit, but Eric Berry, having him back, is he going to have an impact? And is it going to be more emotional, or will, do you think he'll be the same player he was before he, his sickness?
Gosh, I would throw out a doubt. Like, I would, my instinct is to say to you, can you imagine him having a huge impact? And yet at the same time, every fan's going, did you ever think he'd be here at this point? You know, like, I don't think anyone thought he would even play this year. I think there were some, you know, maybe a nod to it, like, oh yeah, he could play. And but I think most people thought he would probably just use the year to get back into form. And then here he is. You're like, you know, Andy Reid came out and said today, you're going to see Eric Berry play in the first preseason game. So it'll be interesting. It will definitely be an emotional boost. It will definitely be a leadership boost. And word from practice is that Berry is showing off, like, what makes him Eric Berry. If they add him to that secondary, I mean, that really, really changes the game for the Chiefs and what they're going to be able to do in Bob Sutton's blitzing schemes, who's the defensive coordinator. So, you know, yeah, that really remains to be seen. I can't think of another player or story like this in this return in recent NFL history, so I wouldn't even know where to go to compare it.
Let's go to this year's draft as we approach this preseason game. What is the team seeing so far in camp from this year's rookies, this year's draft picks, and perhaps some undrafted guys, if anyone is standing out so far?
Yeah, well, the word is great on in the first round they took Marcus Peters, who certainly another kid with off the field concerns, but with number one corner potential. They took him, and word from camp, he's looking very sharp, very quickly. That's pretty important because Sean Smith, who has one position locked down, is going to be suspended for the first three games of the season. So that means that they're giving Marcus Peters, like, starter reps. So even, like, for this first preseason game, I would expect to see Peters out there with the first-string defense as he prepares to just play immediately. It'll be interesting. You know, he's got a definite learning curve. He's never played at that level. You know, it's just a totally different game. But, I think he's already displaying what is going to be, elite ability. And then given, you know, more and more experience, I expect that to play out on the field.
Any other rookies? So far for the Cardinals, the plan is Carson Palmer in the first string offense, or at least the Carson Palmer is going to get one series, whether it's one play, two plays, 10 plays. He's going to be in there one series. Then they're going to rotate guys in and out, Drew Stanton, Logan Thomas, and then their fourth stringer, Phillip Sims. What's kind of the game plan? Are we going to see much of the first team? And after that, is there anyone that Cardinals fans could kind of catch their eye to see who these people are? Because otherwise, preseason football, once you get down to the, I mean, if you're watching your team for the position battles here and there, that's fine. But if you're just looking at football, you're going to be watching a bunch of guys you have no idea. So who? Who will the Cardinals fans be watching this weekend, and who might catch their eye in terms of younger players?
Yeah, that's a good question. You're going to get plenty of looks at Aaron Murray, who they took in the fifth round last year at quarterback. I think Smith will do the same thing that the Cards are going to do with Palmer. He'll get a drive, maybe even, you know, if it's a really short drive, maybe two drives, who knows. You'll see Chase Daniel at quarterback for enough to get some reps, maybe like the second quarter or something. But I would assume a lot of Aaron Murray, since he's the only other quarterback in camp. They don't have a fourth body like they did last year, since Tyler Bray is out with injury. You'll see Eric Berry playing later in the game because he's been running with the second unit. I would assume that would stay true in the upcoming game. So that'll be kind of nice to see someone like Berry playing once the game could get boring. After that, it's unfortunate because a lot of the Chiefs rookies have really been down with some injuries. They drafted a kid, Chris Conley, in the third round, a wide receiver out of Georgia. But he's been injured. I don't know what his playing status is going to be for Sunday, but he could be in. name to watch once the wide receivers have kind of cycled out in terms of Macklin and DeAnthony Thomas. He could be someone to watch for. They've got a promising kid in the seventh round, Deron Brown, small school wide receiver guy that could be interesting there. I think all of Chiefs Nation is kind of hoping. To me, the worst spot on the roster is tight end. You have Travis, you have Travis Kelce, who is clearly just like one of the better tight ends in the NFL. But then after
and completely
that,
destroyed the Cardinals a year ago. We remember. Oh man, we remember him well.
he's amazing, and so that's awesome. But after that, it is the steepest drop on the roster to me. So they drafted a kid out of Illinois State, James O'Shaughnessy, in the fifth round. So again, you're relying on a small school guy to be the number two. There's really no one else. So so he's going to get plenty of playing time, and I think it wouldn't surprise me if they even really try to incorporate him quite a bit into the offensive scheme when he's in, because there's a huge learning curve, and they need someone to show up there.
Well, good to hear. And the great part of this, when it's preseason and you're talking teams, but there's no pressure. Your team wants to win. It comes down to whose third team can be better than the other team's third team. But there's no need for trash talk, because this is a very relaxing conversation. I don't feel the need to dig on the Chiefs at all. it's all fun and games. All fun against the regular season, and we're all friends and everything. But so the right. Outlet, you mentioned at the very beginning, so expectations for the Chiefs is there is a buzz that perhaps they're counting on the Broncos taking a step down to be able to step up, or do they really think that even if Peyton Manning's playing at a pretty good level, that they can really make a dent in that division?
I would think, well, I mean, it could be some of the Broncos fading, but I think it's just more of the Chiefs growing into the deepest and with impact players at all of your really needy positions, Charles and Macklin doing their thing, the bolstering of the line, you have a great pass rush, you have a secondary that could legitimately boast three number one type cornerbacks by the end of the year, along with a solid secondary. Ron Parker, Hussein Abdullah have been the safeties, and then you're going to add Eric Berry to that. I think most people are really anxious to see this defense just completely unleashed. Depending on, and this is the big if, and this is what we didn't talk about, depending on the health of Dontari Poe, like it all starts there with this Pro Bowl defensive lineman who just eats two guys for 90% of the plays every year, and then now he's out with back issues, which is never good for a guy who's nearly 350 pounds. So I think everyone is like, if Poe can come back and do well, this could be, you could be looking at the AFC's and maybe even the NFL's best defensive unit.
That's bold talk, as there's a lot of good defensive units out there, but the Kansas City Chiefs perhaps looking to feel, well, they certainly have the right players in the right places. If you got guys cover on the outside, you've got the edge rushers. If they can get anything on the inside, if Poe's healthy, that will be a dangerous defense. This has been Matt Connor for ArrowheadPride.com. Matt, I really appreciate the time, and the best of luck to you, your team this weekend, as there is nothing at stake as we finally have football, albeit real fake football. It is still be a blast. I appreciate you coming on, Matt. We'll talk to you again sometime soon, all right?
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.